Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for being here, as always. If you listen to this podcast, which you do if you're hearing this right now, you know we do a segment called Your Worst Bomb. And almost every episode, if not pretty much every episode. And I got to tell you, I was in Traverse City this past weekend, 4th of July weekend. It was during the Cherry Festival. Every goddamn time I'm in Traverse City, it's the Cherry Festival. Every time. So, you know, it's like an event center. It's not really a comedy club, but it's, you know, they call it that. And it's actually a nice looking room. And one show Friday, supposed to be two shows Saturday. And I get there, and Friday goes decent enough, well enough. There's some big pops, you know, it goes well enough. Even though I feel like I'm a little rusty. Here's the thing I have to stop doing. This is like the second or third time I've done this, is I didn't do shows for like 10 days before I worked a weekend. Like not even trying to hit a mic or two just to get the rust off. And I remember distinctly, last time I did that was probably about 6-7 years ago. I was working at a club in Decatur, Illinois, that Funny Business booked, and it was called like The Hangar or something. I can't remember. Decatur, Illinois, by the way, is like where they make cat food. So every time you drive into that city, it just smells like cat food the entire time. Very distinct smell. And this particular weekend, I think I was working with Mike Stanley. I think it was Mike. And Michigan guy. And I hadn't done a show in about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks before that weekend. And that Friday, I bombed so hard. I mean, I think the word bomb is overused. I think we say it too much. You know, to me, a bomb is when you're getting nothing. Not even like little something, still a bad set. It's not a bomb. This was an absolute bomb, to where I was doing punchlines for jokes, and I heard a woman in the audience after a punchline just go, "Okay." Like, I mean, that's how bad it was. Like, and she said it in a way that was like, "That's not bad," but no one was laughing. You know, there's something there. This is, come on, this is your first time doing this? Oh, it was brutal. And Traverse City on Saturday was so bad. So I, you know, here's the thing. I am trying not to like be a complete asshole here. I'll say this. The MC was an older woman, and she did something I've never seen anybody do in comedy in the 13 years I've been doing comedy. And they had a guest set show up. A Traverse City comic did guest sets both nights. And she would go up and she would make announcements and then bring him up right away. And I've never seen that. As the MC, you go up, you do time, you do jokes, you get the momentum going, and then you bring the guest set up. You're the first one to do jokes all the time, no matter what. Just because it's a guest set doesn't mean you just don't do jokes. So she would do announcements and then introduce him, and then she would go up afterwards and do jokes. And as far as the guest spot goes, the Traverse City comic, it wasn't bad. It was just, the jokes weren't right for the crowd. This crowd is mostly 50 and older, okay? So needless to say, both comics struggled both nights before me. They did fine, I guess, for the room. I mean, the MC did fine for the room, I guess. I'm not trying to throw her under the bus here. I'm just saying it was very, man. So I'm taking some of the blame here too, because I'm rusty. I haven't done a set in 10 days before I go up and I do this set. So I'm rubbing my head as I tell you this story, because it's just terrific. And I just don't remember, besides doing a college a few years ago, this might be a bomb that really sticks out for me. And the only thing that saved it to where it wasn't a full-fledged, awful, on-fire fucking bomb was the fact that I was doing crowd work to save it. And it wasn't even crowd work. It's this thing I've been doing where I just complain to the audience and it's just me being honest on stage. And sometimes it works, and it worked on Saturday. It was the only thing that, you know, made me think that the set wasn't super, super bad, even though it was. And at one point I said on stage, and this got the biggest laugh of my set, and guys, I think I write pretty good jokes. So I just said it like a moment of honesty. I said, guys, Traverse City is not the city I want to quit comedy in. And that killed. But they didn't like jokes. They wanted no part of jokes. One woman said in the crowd, well, we're not the smartest people. And I was like, you can't speak for everyone, man. That's rude. And, you know, it was just, man. Really, I got to stop doing that. I got to start doing sets before weekend shows. Next week I plan on just hopping on stage a bunch before I work at the Detroit House of Comedy next weekend. It was just one of those nights, dude. Just one of those nights where I was just frustrated. And Mike Green was headlining, and Mike went up. And Mike's a killer, but Mike wasn't even, like, murdering Saturday. He did well enough to, you know, it was acceptable, you know, he did about, it was decent, but even he, you could tell, was like, it's brutal, man. I gotta start looking. When does this Cherry Festival happen? I feel like it's always happening when I'm there, you know. And then the guy who ran the room was very nice, manager of the room, very, very nice guy. But he goes up, there's like 10 people in the crowd, you know, something like that. Maybe 12, 14 people in the crowd. He goes up, he's got cargo shorts on. So like he's got a pocket for each person that's in the crowd, you know. So he goes up and he's just like, welcome to Traverse City Comedy Club. He's very nice. He's, you know, he runs the room pretty well. I just kind of had the feeling, you know, I had that feeling like on Friday, I was like, this is going to be brutal. And it was okay on Friday. It wasn't that bad. And then Saturday was just, and then the guy after the general manager was like, I like your jokes. I want to have you back. I think you're really funny. I'd like to have you back. And I wanted to say to him, you're not going to invite these people back, right? Like the audience. You got a 4-hour drive afterwards, you know. I've been eating right the past month, and this would be the perfect time to go just fucking splurge and put a cheeseburger right down my fucking gullet, because this, you know, the wasn't a great night. But I went right back to the hotel room, and I think I watched an episode of Seinfeld and went to bed. Oh my God, guys. Anyways, we'll get to the guest. I've rambled enough. Tim Finkel is on the show today, and Tim Finkel is a very funny comedian. And I've heard his name tossed around here and there, and I just never ran into him. We never met. And then Camilla Bellario was pretty close with him, and she asked me, do you know who he is? A couple times. I was like, you know, I've heard the name. I saw him at the Blind Pig, and we talked. He's been working for a while. He's a working comic, and he's going to be at One Night Stands tonight when you hear this Friday night and Saturday. I think I'm going to go up there Friday and see him work. I don't have any shows this weekend, so I think I'm going to go up and maybe get a guest set in, see if Mike will give me a guest set. But he was a lot of fun, man. Just took that. We booked this like a month in advance. He came over, took a good chunk of his day out to speak to me. And I really appreciated that. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Check out the very, very funny Tim Finkel.
But I'm not moving, and I'm not. refine. Maybe some other time.
Nice hat for today, too.
Oh, I know. I thought you saw the poster. I was so excited that they won last night. I was super pumped. And then you got these dumb... Are you a basketball fan or no?
I mean, I don't let it dictate my mood or anything that.
That's a healthy way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's pretty much sports across the board for me. But I mean, I have an appreciation for all of it.
I enjoy it and I like it, but there are some people that really take it way too seriously.
Yeah, I've never, I've never had allegiance to any specific team and I've never allowed a sporting event to bring me up or down or same thing with
you mean not even for that time being, even for that day.
I mean, maybe in the heyday of the Bad Boys when I was a kid and things like that, but and I was at the 84 World Series too.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
How old are you, Tim?
43.
Okay, so you're just literally 2 years older than me. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So but and same thing with colleges and things like that. Mm-hmm. Any college I ever went to, I'm not I don't give a shit or I have no allegiance to them or not I'm a Bronco or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, some people take it really seriously. I specifically remember playing basketball in high school and some guy showing up that didn't even go to the high school anymore. He was you look at him, you're like, you obviously graduated at least a decade ago.
Yeah.
And he was really into it. And I was like, dude, this is high school basketball. You don't even go here anymore.
Sure.
So some people really get into it and it doesn't make any sense to me. I get upset for maybe an hour or two and then I let it go. But a lot of people get online. They're on Twitter. They're on Facebook. They're just arguing with everyone. It's just guys, it's sports. It's, there's going to be there's always next season, right?
Yeah. I mean, I like the romanticized idea of something bigger than yourself, but I just never it was never my thing.
Well, you're also a family guy, right? How many kids do you have?
I have two kids.
Two kids. Yeah,
they're 6 and 8 years old, both boys.
Okay. A couple dogs and a wife, right?
We had two dogs.
Okay.
Put one down in April.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was freaking brutal.
Oh, especially with kids, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, the level of grief that came from that was totally unexpected. And, I lost an older brother when I was 30 years old on my 30th birthday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's actually how I got into comedy. We can get to that later.
Yeah.
But I don't mean to sound ridiculous, but that first week after we put our dog down, it was the level of grief that I had after
ridiculous.
My brother died. Yeah. It was brutal. Just
it's not
brutal.
Ridiculous at all. I mean, the thing about think about people don't realize with their family members, and obviously one's more important than the other. We all know that.
Yeah.
But you see the dog every day. You're with the dog every day. Besides your wife and kids, you're not with anyone else every day.
Yeah.
So that's the major difference. You're connected to this pet, this dog, this cat every day. You see it.
Sure.
That's why it hurts so much.
Sure. And we had two. We still have the other one. Mm-hmm. And they'd been together their whole lives. Yeah. And the one dog that we still have, that the personality of that dog really reflects my wife. Mm-hmm. And then the one that died really reflected me. And he was my dog. So,
sure. Yeah.
The house doesn't feel the same. And then the other dog, he's not the same anymore. It's terrible to see, actually. For the first week, he
confused.
Wouldn't come out of the other dog's crate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's it's heartbreaking. I hate to think about it. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no clue. I've had family dogs. I remember, taking a family dog to put him down with my family. And that was rough.
Yeah.
That was when I didn't live at home at that point, but I was at home enough to where they got the dog when I was still living there.
Yeah.
Then I moved out. So I still consider it kind of my dog in a way. And it was brutal. I didn't even know that we're going to be putting him down. He was fine, it seemed, but then they're like, well, you should probably, and we're like, what? And so it was shocking. So
we had a dog growing up that lived to be 17 and a half years old.
That's insane.
So we got him when I was pretty young, and we still had him when I went away to school. And I remember my uncle passed away when I was at school. It was my dad's brother, and I came home for the funeral, and my dad, when he told me, he wasn't upset or anything like that. And I came home for the funeral, and right before we were leaving, he's like, oh, I got to talk to you. And he brought me in the other room. And then he tells me that, uh, the, our dog had passed away as well. And that's like when my dad broke down. Like, he didn't break down talking about his brother or anything like that passing away. He broke down when he had to break the news to me that not only did my uncle pass away, but, you know, our 17 and a half year old dog did too.
Jesus.
But yeah, I mean, they're worth it though.
That's the thing. You have to, like, the good always outweighs the bad. Mm-hmm. It always outweighs the bad. So nothing can last forever, as cliche as it sounds. I always like to start this podcast off on a light note. well, I mean, since we're already into it, because we're already kind of there, what happened to your brother, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So my brother was my older brother. He was 9 years older than me.
Okay.
I have two brothers, 7 and 9 years older. The other one's still here. I feel like I tell this story on every podcast, so I'll try to make it brief.
Dude, you're good.
It was my 30th birthday. Everything was good. He was, you know, he was a married guy. He had three boys. They were 5, 7, and 9 at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was in 2009. And it was when the H1N1 flu was going on and stuff.
Okay.
And he had stayed home from work because he didn't feel well. And that night he put his kids to bed and his wife was in the other room and she heard him snoring erratically. And she came in the other room and he was on the ground and unresponsive. It was 100% unexected. Like I had 2 days prior to that, I had saw him. He was the guest speaker at this retirement banquet for a close family friend of ours. And he had never done stand up or anything like that. Yeah. But he was kind of the guy that like lit up the room and like he freaking crushed that. It was awesome. And so, yeah, he was unresponsive. And my other brother, I remember it was at like 9:30 at night. I had a great day. It was my birthday, having a good time and everything. And he called me and he's like, you got to come to the hospital. It's done. Something happened. And like I had like just a gut intuition like that it was pretty bad. And, you know, he was a healthy guy. There was nothing, no warning signs or anything like that. And they determined that he had passed away like on the spot before they had even got him to the hospital. So it took us a while to really understand what happened and figure it out. And it was kind of a perfect storm of like they had discovered that he had a enlarged heart that had kind of gone undiagnosed for the last 3 years.
Okay.
And then that combined with like the significant flu symptoms he had. And the doctors basically said it was cardiomyopathy, which when you hear some of these like high school athletes that keel over on the floor and things like that, which was scary at the time because like I was a athlete at the time and like really like kind of physically taxing my body a lot. And so I felt like I needed to get checked out and everything like
that. For sure. Yeah. That'll wake you up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was brutal. And it was weird though, because obviously, you know, you go through a pretty bad grieving period after that. You never anticipate you'll lose a brother. You anticipate losing a dog or parents or things like that. But you don't think about like what that'll be like. And it was very sad and I feel like it did make me a better person. But I learned like after I had my own kids and then especially when they got to the same age his boys were.
Yeah.
I went through like the second wave of grieving because I like understood the gravity of like what he left behind.
Oh, wow.
I'll segue that real quick just to get this out of the way of why that led me to comedy. So, my wife after that, like she never knew kind of how to approach my birthday, you know, because
it's it happened
on my birthday, know? So, you know, it's just your birthday.
Oh, that's a weird feeling. It's got to be your birthday every year. It's weird.
Yeah. I feel like this year was probably the best year in terms of, cause it's weird anniversaries and things like that. Yep. Like everything kind of comes back, but my wife never knew how to like approach it. And, you know, quite a few years back, I had always been a big fan of stand-up comedy, but I didn't know how, I didn't know
to get into it.
Yeah, I didn't know you could just decide to do it and then just start doing it.
Yeah.
I didn't know the avenues. And like my wife took that upon herself to research and discover all of that.
Interesting.
And my birthday was coming up and she said, make sure you save the day. I got something big planned for you. I thought we were going to go to the zoo or something.
Yeah.
And she gave me an envelope that morning. And she goes, I signed you up for a stand-up 101 class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, and you have to leave for it in 2 hours. And she goes, and it ends in a final performance there. And, like, I didn't know who Bill Bouchard was. I mean, we'd been to, like, Mark Ridley's before and things like that. And that's how it all started. And she thought, I was coming off of, like, I raced bikes for a long time, like, before kids. And that was, like, all-consuming. Like, I was on the road racing 50, 60 races a year. And when we had kids, I kind of gave that up. And you give up this, like, void of yourself, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So my wife was like, well,
I say that like I know. Go ahead.
Well, anything passionate that you have. I mean, imagine if you tomorrow was like, I have to give up comedy. You would have an enormous void in your life.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And I did that voluntarily. I mean, I knew, like, it was unreasonable to think I could still be involved in the sport I was in. And be like a good dad, you know, like any in shape dad you see is a bad dad, probably. So anyway, my wife knew like I had this void and she's like, well, this could potentially be something that replaces it. But she thought it would be something that you can just dabble in. She didn't think it would become all consuming, she didn't. Like, kind of read that, right?
That's an amazing wife, though. But
yeah, she's fantastic, even though I make fun of her on stage, but she's fantastic.
That's
great,
man. Wow. So you started stand up in your mid 30s then?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. 34, 35?
I think 36.
36,
yeah,
okay.
Yep. That's, or 35,
Well, and you're working now, so you're doing pretty well. I mean, and that's what I mean, and that should be like, it should be anybody that's starting to stand up that, you know, in mid 30s or early 30s, like Bill Bouchard started at 30. That's kind of like a good story, is you can get into it late.
Yeah.
And you probably had way more stuff to talk about than most people. So,
yeah, that's why I'm always amazed at like some of these comics that are in their young 20s that are really great because we have a lot of them in our scene.
Sure.
And I think back. And like, I mean, I was funny then, but I don't think I would have had anything that anyone really wants to listen to. You know, like I'm always impressed that they can mine from the minimal experience they've had. Maybe something
I also just think people are getting smarter. I also think that. You know, so you see these people that are in their 20s and late teens and are starting to stand up, and you're like, I don't want to hear what you have to say. And then you listen, and you're like, okay. All right. Not bad. All right.
You know. Yeah. Well, it's just like when we were kids, if you wanted to learn to play guitar, that would have been a really difficult path because the avenues of to do it were pretty minimal.
Yeah.
But now like a kid can jump on YouTube and be playing Freebird in like 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
So, you can learn anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Just hop on YouTube. Anything.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Same thing with stand up. Like the level of exposure is so much higher than it's ever been before.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so funny that you've been doing for 7 years, and I don't mean this in like a negative way, because I've heard your name tossed around here and there for a while, but we just never met until Blind Pig, maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
Which I'm surprised you even had me on, because I feel like every time you've ever seen me, I've eaten shit.
No, like, I saw you at the Blind Pig. I was like, oh, he's got some stuff.
Oh, okay, good. Because every time I've ever been there, I've been convinced by friends to like really be using it as an open mic. So I'm always trying something that is 100% not worked out at all.
That's the way it is. I just bombed there on Monday. It was horrific. I've never really bombed there, but I wouldn't even say.
But was everyone else bombing? Cause I feel like when I bomb everyone's killing.
Well, I wouldn't even say like I bombed. I would say I half bombed. I would say like, it started off, okay. And then I got a, cause they weren't laughing at what I wanted them to laugh at. So then I just kind of made fun of them for spending money out to drive and not enjoy themselves, which makes zero sense right now to do that.
Yeah.
And then I went into jokes. Those weren't hitting. And then I told them to politely go fuck themselves, which is not something you should do ever as a comedian. And I do it twice a year. It happens everywhere. I just get frustrated and I go, what? Cause I just don't understand people that show up that want to laugh, but they're not giving you. You know, it's not always going to be easy. I understand that. But I was also on the middle of the lineup and people were doing well for that night.
Yeah.
But all in all, no one was really doing very well.
Yeah.
They were doing well for the night. They were really having to work. And I was like, I don't want to work. want to do that.
You know, you ever had an audience where you like didn't want them to laugh at you? Like, I don't like you guys, and like I'm pretty okay with that.
Yeah, especially if someone that goes up before you and they're hacky and they're murdering, and you're like, and then you go up, and even if you do well, it just kind of feels like it means nothing.
Yeah, you're like, well, those weren't that wasn't what I wanted to win over.
So, yeah.
So yeah, probably part of the reason we probably never crossed paths. I like when I first started, I did try to hit mics quite often. Mm-hmm. But then I was fortunate enough to like, you know, get a decent amount of paid work.
Yep.
And it's not that I don't like doing mics. I love doing mics. Yeah. If I could do a mic every night of the week, I absolutely would.
Right.
But I have always had to be like extremely economical with my time between work, family, and balancing all of that. So, you know, I try to, more recently this last year, I've been trying to put myself in rooms that like I know are probably not for me.
Yeah. Okay. You know?
Just for growth reasons. I also consider a bomb now is anything like less than like a B minus on stage.
See, that's crazy. You know what I mean?
Because
that's the case. People bomb all the time. Then.
But once you've got like a decent batting average of, you know, enough shows, then you, I think that should be good. I think your level of what bombing is should go
interesting
up,
you know what okay I mean?
Like you should keep holding yourself to a higher standard. I've never been one of those people though that like relishes, there are some people who like kind of relish in bombing,
yeah,
like, and who are incredible comics,
yeah,
and like they, I've never, back to the sports thing, I've never let it dictate my mood or anything like that. Well, even like when I do well, I don't let the highs get me too high or the lows get me too low. But I've always been amazed by some people who are like, almost they like brag about a good bomb.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I've never met a comedian with a good attitude.
Are you saying I have a good attitude?
It seems like it. Seems like you're a pretty positive outlook, you know?
Yeah, I am kind of a optimist by default.
That's good.
That's kind of my personality.
We need a few of those in comedy. There's not enough, you know?
Yeah. I was a teacher for 21 years.
Okay.
And I taught students with severe emotional impairments my job. So those types of students oftentimes come from like pretty traumatic backgrounds and things like that. And like we had a lot of bad days. And it gives you a certain amount of perspective in terms of like what an actual problem is, you know? So I'm usually pretty if my basic needs are being met, I'm pretty optimistic.
It takes you a lot to get mad.
Yeah, I got a long fuse. I got that from my dad. I only saw my dad get mad twice in my life.
Oh, wow.
And both times I was like really happy I wasn't on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, because it means something.
It means something.
Mad.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. If someone loses their temper all the time, it's like, well, that's a you thing. You need to work on yourself.
Yeah.
But if it's every once in a while, you actually take a look at the other thing. You're like, maybe it's not you this time. So,
yeah.
That is true, man. I grew up around bad tempers. Just my stepdad. I just grew up around yelling and all that stuff. So for me, I don't yell often. And when I do, I feel absolutely terrible. Cause I think you can solve problems being just, hey, Tim, look, I didn't like that you did this, or vice versa. You can solve it like that. It's also way healthier. But I've had moments where I yell at someone, which does not happen. Maybe once every few years it happens. And I go, wah. I'll yell when I'm like, if I get mad and I'm alone and something happens, I'll yell. No one's around. But to yell at someone else.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about short. That is the easiest way to get me mad is if you yell at me. We're going to have problems real quick.
Yeah.
Because I just grew up with it. And I'm like, I don't like it. I don't want you to do it. I'm not going to do it to you. So don't do it to me. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's oof.
I'm trying to work on a bit about this. I'm a 43-year-old man. I've never been in a fight in my life. Okay, I've never punched a person.
That says a lot more about you.
And I've never been punched.
That says a lot more about you than anything else, though. That's good.
But I feel like that's unique.
It is unique.
And I probably maybe should get in
maybe not right now. you're a family member. You don't want that. And then you got to explain it to the wife and kids, and it's weird. But no, you haven't been punched in the face ever?
No, not intentionally.
Any close calls? Any close calls?
Not intentionally. Like, I was into, like, a lot of, like, punk rock music as a kid, and I might have got a fist, like, in a mosh pit on accident here and there. Like, I remember getting a black eye at a concert at St. Andrews once, but none of it was, like, intentional. No one, like, hauled off and clocked me.
I remember I've been hit in the face a few times. I mean, mostly like you when I was young in my teens and stuff. I remember one time getting into a elementary school playground fight with this kid. And most of the time when the person that instigates the fight always loses. It's just, that's how it always is. Anytime you see, like, it's not like the movies, you know?
Yeah.
Anytime you see it, the bully is never the toughest. It's the person being bullied usually. And because it just builds up. And then, you know, but I remember like
Ralphie.
Yeah.
Christmas story.
Ralphie, Chris. I remember like putting this kid in a headlock, and then like he reversed it somehow and put me in a headlock. And that was it. We're done. That was it. He just held onto my neck for like 10 minutes. And, and that kind of taught me from that age, like, you know what? Don't mess with people, you know, just try to be cool. And ever since then, it takes me a long time, but
yeah, that's probably good. And my brothers were too old to, like, at 7 and 9,
mm-hmm.
like if we're getting in tussles, that's like not very fair of a fight. You know what I mean?
That's true.
I didn't really get it from my brothers either. Yeah. So
usually the brothers are fighting all the time.
My boys are 22 months apart and they're both in karate and mean, it is a constant. It's a royal rumble every day in our house.
I'm sure they love each other and they'll probably have each other's back and all that stuff.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, they do. Yeah. That's another bit I'm trying to work on because both our dogs were boys. My boys are boys. Yeah. I'm a boy and my wife is not.
It's just a bunch of men she's around.
Yes, absolutely. All the time. And she grew up with a sister.
Okay.
And, you know, her dad, as a result, is not like the most macho dude in the world.
Oh, interesting.
And so like any sort of masculine energy, she doesn't fully understand it. So I'm trying to work on a bit about how men tell each other they love each other by saying fuck you.
She doesn't get
that at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like all of my closest friends, like I say the worst shit to them
and
insult them to no end.
Yeah.
I remember I had a student once who told me, she goes, Mr. Finkel, I noticed that you only make fun of the kids that you like. She goes, the kids you hate, you don't say a goddamn word to.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about doing this too. I mean, I do it with people that don't do stand up, but you just dig at each other. You just make fun of each other.
Yeah.
And that's how you show love.
Yeah, know? Absolutely.
I mean, it's starting to get, you know, I've friends now that are starting to say I love you here and there. But it's still, I think it still needs to be said more than, you know, than generations in past, you know?
Yeah.
I know I've had friends over there. My dad never said he loved me. And I'm like, that's insane. That's crazy. Yeah. Of course you're fucked up. Why wouldn't you be? You haven't heard, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Just different generations, you know?
Yeah. I think about that a lot because I probably tell my...
Are you like that with your kids? Do you tell them you love them a lot?
Absolutely. Yeah, so much. And they say it all the time too. The best is like when they just say it out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's the greatest feeling in the world.
Absolutely.
And I do all the time. And then oftentimes I think about, like, I don't know how you couldn't do that.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But they do frustrate me more than anything in the entire world.
Yeah,
There's no doubt about it. And like back to like the yelling thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I yell daily at them. And I don't want to.
I think it's different if you're yelling at your kids, you know? It's
like you just meet a breaking point.
Yeah,
and,
for
like,
sure.
Both my kids are, like, they're both diagnosed, like, ADHD, but, like, what kid isn't anymore?
Yeah.
Like, I don't hold any weight in that or anything,
yeah.
But, like, they are, like, my oldest son is, like, he doesn't sleep. He wakes up like he's launched out of a cannon. Like, he really is, like, trying to hold on to like a moving train and like his mind just works. He's very intelligent, but his mind just works like a motor. Yeah. he we had him do a couple sleep studies because when he was younger, he literally slept like half the amount of time a kid should.
Yeah.
And he used to, like when he was like 2-3 years old, he'd be talking to you in conversation when you're putting him to bed. He's never fallen asleep on purpose in his life. It's like he always is like it, just he fights it till he goes to sleep. It's the truth.
I just would like to see that he's just got his eyes wide open in bed. He's just like,
that's what it is. And so, like, he'd be 3 years old and we'd be talking about something. Like, yeah. He'd be in mid conversation and then he couldn't do it and he'd pass out.
Yeah.
And then he'd wake up after like 4, 5, 6 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And the moment he woke up, he'd pick up on the sentence he left off on.
Get out of here. Are you serious?
Yeah, so I told
this. It's creepy.
It is creepy. It's really creepy. Wow. And so I told this to, like, the doctor who was the sleep study guy. Yeah. And I swear to you, like, he goes, that's fucked up. And yeah. I'm like, you're a doctor. Like,
that's his diagnosis?
Yeah. Yeah, he was shocked by it. He's like, that's a new one for me.
Wow.
But
does he sleepwalk?
I feel like recently, and he's been saying he has been, because mm-hmm. he'll like wake up downstairs and not remember going down there or anything. I feel he's been better lately. He's been the more he's like growing now and everything, he's sleeping better. But I mean, the doctor basically, like, after like two like overnight sleep studies where he's hooked up to all the electrodes and all that, mm-hmm. like the result was they go, yeah, there's nothing wrong with him. He's just what we call a short sleeper. I'm like, well, I mean, I paid a lot of money. I knew that. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, he just has like short circadian rhythms. Yeah. And he goes, you know, he'll probably be really productive when he grows up. But I'm like that to a certain extent, mm-hmm. Especially before kids. But now I would love to sleep, but sure. I haven't in 8 years.
Like, do you get 2-3 hours of sleep a night? Is that what?
Well, part of it's my own fault, because the kids go to bed and mm-hmm. you haven't had a moment of time to yourself.
Yep.
And then it's like, well, now you want to party and like, I'm going to tip back a few beers and things like that.
That is
like,
exactly what it is. You're staying awake for the moment. You should be sleeping, but you're staying awake to have a moment for yourself.
You don't want it to slip by.
I'm like that at work. I'm like, I tell my bosses all the time, because, you know, the job I work, it's like, you're done when you're done. So I go in at like 6:30, 6:45. And I could be done at 4.
Yeah.
I could be done at 6. It just depends. And I always tell them, I was like, if I get back at 6:30, like 6:30 is a cutoff for me. If I get back at 6:30, I'm not coming in tomorrow. I'm not coming. Cause now you're fucking with my time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you're messing with my time where I just want to go. Cause I have a job where you can't, like, I can't go from, a lot of people can go from their job to a show. I cannot do that.
Because
I have chemicals. I have, you know, I'm spraying stuff all day. Yeah. So I literally I just canceled. A couple of
you
months
just mean
recently.
Logistically, not mentally, right?
Yeah, it's not good. Like it would be gross. It's not. Yeah. So I have to, like, you know, I canceled a couple shows a couple weeks ago. I forgot where it was at. And just because I was the Gillerin show, because by the time I got home, it was like a little after, was it maybe 7:30, maybe a little after 7. And I was like, and I could have technically made the show, but I'm not coming home after a 12 and a half hour shift, hopping in the shower, letting my dog out for a half hour, then putting it right back in. I'm just like, yeah,
isn't there nothing better than canceling though?
Oh, I love it. What's
the best feeling in the world? It's fantastic.
By the way, book me.
Yeah. I don't do it often, but when I do, it is amazing.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. Darnell and KJ were on there, and KJ was telling me that I got flake tag. He said, you got the super flake tag. And that was because, like, 2018, I had a really awful year mentally. So I was canceling shows left and right, mostly not paid. I think I've canceled maybe 2 or 3 paid shows in 13 years. But if I, like, a pre-booked open mic or an open mic or whatever, it's, you know, I don't do it as much anymore, but it's, there's no better feeling to be like, oh, I got stuff to do tonight. Fuck. And then you just go, oh, I'm a human being. I just tell another human being that I'm not going to be there tonight. And that releases everything for me. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
And it's normally, it's an open mic if I cancel. It's not like that big of a deal. There's going to be other comics there.
Oftentimes, it's more important in your own head than anyone else's.
100%.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. But for KJ to tell me you get the super flat, I was like, oh, that's not good. People just think I cancel. But you're right. It's a great feeling to be like, because you don't know what's going to happen that day. You know, someone says you want to do something in a few weeks. Like, we booked this podcast like about a month ahead of time. So you never know what can happen, you know, stuff happens. So, and then that day comes and you're like, I don't really got it in me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm pretty diligent and disciplined with my schedule. Mm-hmm. Like, I absolutely have to be. Yeah, and I do feel like every second of my, I do a joke about it, but like every second of my life is scheduled now.
Yeah,
it's
a routine.
Yeah, it has to be. Like if you want to like do it all,
yeah,
there's no other way.
Does your wife know you're here right now?
She does. Yeah, yeah. Nice. But she didn't, she was questioning it. She goes, why are you going to do that?
She's like, it's this is what we do, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
comedy. It's kind of what we do.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
so funny.
Well, I got my, I told her I'm doing it to promote my teen comedy class at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. So I apologize for the plug.
No, is that a real thing? Go ahead. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. But now I can go home and
there
tell
go.
My wife that this is why I came here. But no, I teach a teen comedy class at Mark Ridley's Comedy
oh, that's
Castle.
Great.
Yeah, we started it last summer.
Oh, shit.
And
so what do you mean teen? Just like 13 to 19?
Yeah, yeah, like okay. 13 to 18 year olds.
Okay.
Bill Bichart did it a couple summers in a row.
Yeah, I literally just said, what does teenager mean? That's what I just said.
Yeah, 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 that's a teenager. Yeah. I didn't include 19, though, because
yeah, yeah.
then you're like, in a,
that's
creepy.
An adult.
That's an adult.
Yeah, yeah. 19 with 13 year olds is.
Yeah, yeah. We had an 11-year-old last year that his mom like begged to let me in, and he was mm-hmm. the best one in the class.
Really?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Interesting.
It was pretty amazing. Yeah, he had a like a legit applause break on his opening joke.
Oh my
god. It was pretty impressive.
That makes me want to quit now.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. So anyway, yeah, I started that last summer. Mm-hmm. That was Bill had kind of led me into that. He had tried it a few times doing it on his own, and he okay. felt like it was kind of an untapped market. And
I've seen you a couple times, but you're clean, right, for the most part?
People think I'm clean.
Okay.
And I was probably cleaner before than I am
what
now.
What I'm trying to say is Bill shouldn't be teaching comedy to teenagers.
Oh, that's yeah, yeah. Style-wise, if they
kidding,
go
I'm
and watch
kidding.
His own
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. yeah. No, people mistake me as clean all the time, but like, I think it might just because I smile on stage. Like, I remember Steve Hansen told me once.
You smile on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Hansen told me once, he goes, with all due respect, Tim, he goes, I think you could say fuck on stage and everyone's going to think you're still clean.
Is that a real thing though? Did you swear on stage or?
Yeah, I don't say fuck on
yeah,
stage.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm against that or anything.
yeah, yeah,
I just I never have on occasion. Usually when I do, it's like off the script.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never like, you know, I just I did want to get work out of the gate. You know what
yeah,
I mean? So
yeah.
I never really wrote worse than like PG-13. But I do remember one time in Bill's class.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, you don't know what you're doing when you first start that.
Absolutely,
and you're noodling
yeah.
around up
yeah,
there and everything.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, it was like the second or third week, and I did whatever I had put together. And he looked at me and he goes, great premises, good jokes, everything. He goes, take all the fucks out.
yeah.
And
yeah,
I remember going, noted. And he goes, with all due respect, he goes, it does not sound natural coming out of your mouth.
Oh, that is so
mouth.
Funny.
So,
that's so funny.
So, yeah. I mean...
you're like, but I got kids and I yell at them. So...
Yeah. yeah. You gotta... You know, you gotta... That's the one thing that, like, over the years doing comedy, like, the one thing I've accepted is because there is a style that, like, I love that I know I can't do. You know what I mean?
Okay,
so like
what kind of style is that?
I did Detroit House of Comedy last weekend, and I had to follow Josh Adams, which I did not prefer. And I watched every time I see him or like I think like I couldn't do the style like that.
Okay,
but there's a bunch of comics like that I could never have that style.
You know, also like, and I've said this I don't know if I've ever said it in the podcast, but I think personally, and I think a lot of people might would agree, I think Josh Adams is the best comic in the state.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, he's got so much experience. He's been doing it for like 15, 16 years and great jokes, great crowd work. There's not a weakness in his stand up, which is
he doesn't give the audience an option to not laugh.
He really doesn't.
And
to top
cool.
it all off, he is natural. He's got a lot of us have to, you know. Not saying he doesn't work. He does work. But a lot of us we have to fucking write the jokes. It doesn't come natural to a lot of us. It's like funny is a learned thing to an extent. I think some people are just naturally funny off stage. But he's just got he's got everything, dude. I've had to follow him too. It's not fun. Did you do okay though?
Yeah, I would give myself like a B. Okay, yeah. B plus maybe.
What also might help you out that you guys are completely different. Completely different.
Well, I mean, I had to like acknowledge that right up front.
Yes.
So like I walked out and I say, now it's like the gumpy white guy portion of the program. To like, I had to reset it.
Yeah, no, you have to reset it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than, that's how you know you're going to bomb. You know, early on in comedy when someone would kill before me, I'd go, well, I got to match that energy. Do not match that energy. You're going to bomb every time.
Yeah.
Just do your thing, your energy. Even if you have to pause for a minute or two when you get on stage, not a minute or two, a few seconds, and then just do your thing. Do not think about the person in front of you or about, you know, that went up before you, because it's not going to be good. It's going to be bad. If you're like, I'm going to try to do that. Don't try to do that. That's not you. You know?
Yeah. Well, and that's like what, so like throughout this like whole, you know, comedy process throughout the last few years, that's the one thing that I've come to realize, you know, within the last few years is like, you know, I am who I am. These are the ingredients I have to work with. You can't change that. So it's like great, use those ingredients. And like, you know, I didn't go to the Independent for a long time after it opened. And I, Camilla like convinced me to go with her one time.
And that's how I learned about you, by the way. She was talking about you.
Oh yeah. 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 I hosted close, her, right? Grad show.
Okay.
And then we've been good friends ever since. Yeah, she's great. And so she convinced me to go there. And it was for Liza Traeger, and it was an incredible, it was a great show. And then I did the shit show afterwards, and I had a blast, and it was fantastic. And I thought to myself, what a cardinal sin that like I like avoided this place so long because I thought it wasn't for me. And then I ended up doing a weekend there after that, and that was the first thing, like, I just changed my approach acknowledging to the audience, like, we don't have the same experiences. I'm not for you, but like those are still some funny jokes that we can talk about.
When you
about
did here. Detroit House of Comedy, what was the ratio of audience wise? Like white, black, what was the ratio?
Oh, I thought it was pretty balanced that night, but it wasn't, I would say at best it was like 30% full that night. So I'm interested to see how it goes.
I hope tonight. I hope it's like that. I hope it's 50-50. That'd be amazing. I hope like it's because, you know,
I think it'll be a reflection of what downtown Detroit looks like on a weekend, which I think would be a pretty good balance.
Yep. Which is great. And it's a perfect place to put a club.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm rooting for its success. Norm Stoltz told me something once. We did a show on the road together, and he said, like, obviously your job is to be funny, but he said one of your number one jobs is when to have the audience only thinking about what you're doing when you're up there.
Sure.
So if you're noodling around and they're like, man, I got to put that laundry away when I get home and things like that, he's like, then you're not doing your job. Obviously being funny is important, but you want to have them only thinking about you. And I think about that a lot on stage when, you know, and I'm sure you relate to this, but you're always scanning, and you could be killing 97% of the audience. And then you're like, but these guys. And that's often the, you know, you're like, I need to get them thinking only about me right now.
It's a great piece of advice, but it's something that comics aren't thinking about. You are now because he told you. But it's I know when I'm about to get on stage, I just want to be funny. But you're not, but you should also be like, I want them to pay attention to me 100%. Like, have you ever had a moment where you're bombing, but it's quiet, but you got their attention?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the worst.
You got them.
That is the worst. When they are paying attention, they are all in and you are not delivering.
Yeah.
It's one thing if you're bombing and it's like not a great setup and like there's noise and people aren't really paying attention, kind of not on you to be a babysitter at that point. But to be like completely have their attention and not make them laugh. You can't put it on them. You can't at that point. You're like, fuck me. You know what I mean? It's all on me. It's the worst feeling. That to me is a true bomb.
I do think there is a lot of nuanced intrinsic influence you have over how it goes though. And I'll relate it to this. So coincidentally, I actually relate quite a bit of lessons that I learned from bike racing to comedy.
Interesting. Okay.
And there are like a lot of bike races that I lost in the parking lot before I even lined up.
Okay.
Because, like, I mind fucked myself. And,
sure.
Like,
yes.
I put myself out of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were also races that I won in the parking lot before I lined up.
Okay.
And the same thing has happened with comedy shows.
Mm.
There's been bombs that I've had that, like, it happened before I even took the stage.
It was in your head.
It was, yeah, I just didn't have the right energy that day. I might have been managing just too many things in my head. I couldn't get myself to the place I needed to be. But then there were, like, have you ever had a night where you're like, it's going to be killer no matter what? That's how I know it's going to be.
Yes,
tonight
yes.
is going to be fantastic.
They're smiling when they're walking in.
But even that, yeah. Not even before you see the audience.
Oh, okay.
Just knowing, like, tonight's going to be the night. I know it. I feel it inside. I have what it takes tonight.
I can't allow myself to get there. I
every
can't.
Once in a while that happens,
yeah.
You know? But there are some nights where driving out there, I'm like, I am miles from where I need to be mentally right now to do what I need to do.
It's sometimes you're not in the mood to be funny.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap it up. Let's close with
your worst. How long we got here?
We're almost at an hour.
Oh, wow. That was minutes, quick.
I thought this was
a 5-hour format.
We just split it up.
This isn't
Tim Finkel part 5.
Yeah. Speaking of a parts podcast, I started listening yesterday to Shane Gillis podcast.
The Presidents?
Yes.
Louis
Fantastic.
C.K.
I was mowing my lawn. I listened
That's
to it
awesome.
The whole way out.
It's downloaded. Right now. I have not listened to it, but I've heard
You're
great
in
things.
For a real treat.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. Not to plug another podcast.
No.
So you can edit that out if
That's
you want.
No, it's awesome. Let's get to your worst bum. Or one that just sticks out to you.
Yeah. So I know you asked this question, so I thought about it a little bit ahead of time. And I do listen to the podcast, by the way, and
that.
I think you're
Thank
good at doing
thanks,
this,
man.
Too,
Thank
by the
you,
way.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Otherwise, I would have never drove an hour to come out here.
Sometimes I don't think I am.
So yeah.
It feels nice when people say that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So biggest bomb was, this was one that was 100% environmental, but maybe a year or two in, we did a show at a place that's no longer there in Pontiac, and it was a bikini bar.
Oh, come on.
And it was...
Come on.
Yeah, it was a bikini bar, and these women that were working there, you would have paid money for them to put clothes back on.
Okay, sure.
And the lineup was quite good. It was myself, Camro, Jason Jamerson...
Jason's very funny.
Lauren Ukolik, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it.
Ukolik.
Yep. And Josh Adams.
It's a great lineup.
Really good lineup. Yep. And but the problem was that they were doing it like a variety show, so there was like spoken word and rap and all this.
Oh, stop it. Come on.
Jesus. And Josh came in, and he had a hat on, and they told him he needed to take his hat off. So that like pissed him off right off the bat.
At a bikini bar.
At a bikini. Yeah, you had to take your hat off at a bikini bar. Yeah. And it was a weird dichotomy of people, too. So it was like, you know, it was probably shortly after like the 2016 election.
OK.
And I felt like you had everyone in the place. You had representations of both sides and like the whole place could
everyone
duel at any given moment.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah. It was a really weird dichotomy of people. And so this guy.
Cleavage will unite anyone.
Yeah. This guy who was booking it, he's like, he wanted to do, all right, we'll do a little bit of rap, then we'll do a little bit of comedy, then we'll do spoken word, then we'll bring another comic.
This guy's never run a show.
And Josh comes in and he goes, no, fuck that. We're doing 45 minutes of comedy and we're leaving.
Yeah.
And so he goes, how long were you supposed to do? How long were you supposed to do? And like, I was like 10. He's like, You're doing five. You're like, he goes, we're shortening this all down.
Oh, wow.
And so everyone went up, everybody bombed. No one was,
of course,
like the crowd.
Even Josh?
No, he got up and he like did just observational stuff about the room and started making fun of everyone and like turned the whole thing. And there's one specific thing that I remember that I won't forget. There was this white kid in the front row, goofy looking kid. And he was like not laughing. And Josh looked at him. He goes, laugh, motherfucker. And the kids started slow clapping. like he started slow clapping and staring at him.
Yeah.
And Josh stepped back and he goes, whoa. He goes, see, we found the school shooter in the bunch. And that was when I looked at that and I go, yeah, I'm probably never going to be able to do that.
Like, that's so funny.
But so that was the worst bomb, though, because it was just awkward and like,
yeah.
But I mean, not the most uncomfortable bomb because everybody was bombing and we were all in it together.
There's something about that, especially when you're with friends and people, you know, that are funny and there's like four or five, there's something about that where you're like, this is going to suck, but we're going to still enjoy each other's company. We can talk about how it's going to suck before and after, you know?
I do have one other one.
Sure.
So, did you do Big Tommy's ever when it was like going on?
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, Big Tommy's is I really wouldn't call it a comedy club. It's a room that's under a Coney Island. It's a basement of a Coney Island.
Let's
basically.
Be fair. It's a Greek. It's a Greek restaurant. And
all right. Well,
it's
a Coney Island. No, you're right. It's I get those two mixed up. I've done it a couple times.
It's Billy who owned Kickers.
Is it Billy owned Kickers?
Yeah.
That makes interesting. I used to work Joey's all the time.
Same guy.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. I've only ever hosted and done a guest set there. I've never.
Okay.
He's can't move up at Big Tommy's, you guys.
Yeah.
If you put
your work in, you'll get past it. They are still doing shows there. I did one in February.
The thing is, you don't even know when they're doing shows. I don't even know. Like,
oftentimes, when I've done shows there, it's been the day of Billy booked me and he's like, hey, buddy, can you come?
That's what I heard. He doesn't really have his shit together. That's really funny.
But anyway, so for whatever reason, that was a place that, like pre-pandemic, I could do like a weekend every month there.
Okay.
And he was like featuring me like every month. So like it's like,
how are the, is that place ever been full?
It's a binary 0 or 1 place.
Interesting.
It's either a complete shit show or it is on fire.
Okay.
And oftentimes they do a lot of fundraisers there. So the fundraiser shows generally are pretty good, but for whatever reason, like me and a handful of other comics were just like his go-to guys for it. And pre-pandemic, I took it for granted because I actually developed quite a bit of things there because it was a quote unquote club, but you could treat it like a mic.
Sure.
So you could like actually be doing a weekend where you're working stuff out. So anyway, there was one weekend where I was featuring there the night prior.
Who were you with?
I'm not going to say because it has to do. It has to do with the story here.
Okay. Go ahead.
And so the night prior, was fantastic show.
Okay.
Like just like I left there thinking, man, that was one of the best shows I've ever been on.
Yeah.
And then the next night, same headliner, I'm featuring and I went on. He wasn't there yet. And I remember going on. Oh, and that night there was no MC because Billy's like, ticket sales are a little light. We're just going to have you feature and MC. He goes, I'll have you do like 35 minutes up front.
Yeah. Very organized.
Yeah. Which is a lot of funny business shows are like that too, you know, which is tough because, you know, you're like, when you do that much time, like if you're 5 minutes in and you're like, they don't like me.
Two person shows are the worst.
Yeah. So anyway, I go up, headliner's not there yet. I'm like at 40 minutes and still not there. And then they finally show up. And I'm like over four. I was at like 42 minutes. So I'm like just scratching at anything, you know, and I'm not like the greatest crowd work guy. And I was trying to work that.
Yeah.
And so I got off stage and he went on. And just watching the two shows from the night prior, like I could have done his opener for him.
Wait a minute. Big Tommy's is doing how many shows a week?
They used to do like two shows in a night, depending on believe it or not. Yeah, yeah. I watched his show enough that I could have done his opener.
Okay.
He got on stage and he was completely hammered who knows what else is
going
on.
That's what he had to do to get there.
Yeah, so he... Yeah, exactly. So he's on stage and he's trying to get through his opener and he can't get through... He can't get the words out. He can't do it.
Yeah.
And he starts looking at the lights and he's like, man, look at these lights. Holy cow, I can't even see past these lights.
Oh my God.
He's about 4 minutes in.
He's telling me off mic who this is. Go ahead.
He's about 4 minutes into a headlining set.
Yeah.
And he goes, I can't. and he walked off stage. And so then the audience is like, and it already wasn't a great show.
So
then the audience is sitting there like in dead silence, like, what do we do now? And then Billy looks at me and goes, Tim, can you get up there and do more time? And I'm like, exhausted. Everything.
You should have booked an MC, bud.
Yeah. So I went up there and did like a little bit more time, and then, and I never like make fun of like a comic, but I had to reset the room. Right. And so I did a little bit more time, and then Billy said, he goes, all right, everyone at this show can come to the late show for free. And so then he called Melvin Bender to come in for the late show.
Okay.
Who did fantastic. It was great. And, but I remember going and sitting in my car, and that was my first time.
Calling him up like he's a pitcher.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Pulling him from the bullpen. I remember sitting in my car though and thinking like, that was the first time where I'm like, oh, this is like a job and this sucks right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it like was not a good feeling.
Yeah. I know you work there, but I'll be honest with you. If there's any venue in Michigan where I'd quit while I was on stage, that might be the first one.
Yeah. There you go.
Dude, this has been fun, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming over, dude. Hour drive, an hour?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was looking for an excuse to get out of the house, so it's good.
Don't tell your wife that. This was so much fun, man. Thanks, Tim. I'll see you soon, bud.
Yeah, all right.